I want to tell you about a podcast you should check out. It's called Understood Explains. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Urtube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. The latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. As a parent myself of a child who's had an IEP since kindergarten and he's now a 10th grader, I know how confusing, overwhelming, frustrating, sometimes daunting the whole process can be. I checked out an episode of Understood Explains called The Difference Between IEPs and 504 Plans. And what I love about it is how easily Juliana explains everything. She answers common questions that probably every parent or caregiver has. She dispels myths and is concise and to the point. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. And there's a direct link in the show notes if you need it. This is the Your Kick-Ass Life Podcast, episode 19.
This is the Your Kick-Ass Life Podcast with Andrea Owen, a no BS guide to self-help and badassery. Because ladies, let's face it, life's too short for it to not kick ass. And here's your host, the girl who serves it up straight with a side of crazy, Andrea Owen.
Hey, ass kickers. Welcome to another episode of the Your Kick-Ass Life podcast. We are here on episode 19 already, and I am thrilled because I have a guest this time. I'm not alone today, thank goodness. I am joined by the lovely Nicole Antoinette of A Life Less Bullshit. And when I heard of her, I can't, again, and I've said this to Nicole like 100 times, like, I can't believe we didn't know each other sooner. I found out who you were through a mutual friend of ours, Molly Mehar, and I was like, I have to know her right now. And I went to her website, gobbled up everything I could about her, and sent her an email immediately and said, please be my friend. And thank God she said yes and didn't say, you're weird, go away. And thank you for being here, Nicole. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. I felt the same way as soon as I got your email. I was like, what? Who are you that you're not in my world already? Yes, let's be friends immediately.
And so here we are making up for lost time and on my podcast. And why don't we start? Can you just introduce yourself to my audience and tell them who you are? What's your story? What's your astrological sign? All the necessary things we need to know about you.
Right? How much time do you have?
Let's spend 45 minutes doing that.
Right. I'm Nicole. I'm in Gemini. I like long walks on the beach. No, I... Right. This has become an online dating podcast. I run lifelessbullshit.com, where I help people eliminate the bullshit in their lives, through a 2-step process that I love, where first you change your story, you know, the story that you tell about yourself to yourself, and then changing your daily habits. And, you know, I got started doing this really organically, built a business without knowing that I was building a business, essentially, and everything that I talk about on the site, it's all changes that, you know, I've been through personally, going from, you know, where I was, what is that now, about 3 or so years ago, drunk all the time, not doing any exercise, really unhealthy, not really doing anything that I wanted to do with my life, to
Did you say drunk all the time?
Drunk all the time. Yeah. All the time.
You were my girl.
I just, you know, I was living a really unhealthy life kind of in every way, and just kind of felt like I was floating, and started making some changes, you know, one after the other that, you know, obviously I'm happy to talk about. And that kind of led me to where I am right now. The realization of, you know, before you can change your life, you have to change your story. You know, you have to change what you tell yourself is true and possible. And that's the first step. And that's, you know, really what I love working with people to do.
Awesome. Awesome. So yeah, again, she's at alifelessbullshit.com. And let's start out, you know, you were talking about changing your life, and as we know, it's December now, and January is coming up, and January is when all the gyms get really crowded, and
and everyone hires personal trainers and makes these goals that this year is going to be it. And this year is the year that they're going to change their life and start working out. And so you like to talk about the myth of motivation. So can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's totally the perfect time of year for that too. But, you know, I think that, you know, exercise and fitness related stuff in general is a really kind of good breeding ground to talk about motivation. I think it's applicable in a lot of other ways as well. But, you know, one of the biggest problems I think is that we talk about motivation the way we talk about our car keys, for example. You know, I've lost it. I can't find it. I can't get out of the house without it. You know, we make it this really powerful thing, you know, that controls us. Motivation is, you know, I'm a runner, so I talk about this through kind of the lens of running, but motivation, you know, is to runners what, you know, the muse is to artists. It's like this mythical thing that we're convinced needs to strike us before we're able to produce, you know, any results. We can't do anything if we're not motivated, and lack of motivation becomes, you know, the reason or the excuse, you know, and so we pour our energy into what I, you know, I think are the wrong things, you know, creating the perfect Pinterest board filled with, you know, images of, you know, lean, strong people, quotes about running and fitness, you know, and then we wonder why we're still not quote unquote motivated enough.
The perfect playlist on our iPhone.
Exactly. And, you know, all of these are tools. You know, I'm not saying, you know, never listen to music, never listen, look at anything that inspires you. But I think that the balance is a little bit off. You know, we keep looking for motivation to hit us kind of like it's a savior. And I don't think that that's true. I don't think that, you know, I think motivation's bullshit. I think that, you know, there's other things, you know, that we really need instead. For me personally, you know, I can share a little bit about my backstory. I, you know, never played sports, never did anything active, never even as a kid, no, you know, peewee anything, no dance classes, no yoga. You know, and I, like I said, I used to drink a lot. I was, you know, really unhealthy. I had terrible insomnia for about 6 years. I would sleep maybe 2 hours a night, 4 hours a night, wound up figuring out through, you know, a series of events and finally seeing an acupuncturist that I'm allergic to alcohol. Yeah. And that's what was causing my insomnia. You know, so she said, quit drinking for 5 weeks and let's see what happened. And I mean, at that point, she could have said, cut out your own kidney and you'll be able to sleep. And I would have done it, you know? And so I did. And I started sleeping almost immediately, 7 or 8 hours a night. And I thought, oh my God, I have so much energy. Is this how normal people feel? I finally have the energy to work out. And I had always wanted to be a runner, you know, and I thought, okay, this is a good time to start. I could maybe run 2 minutes when I first started. Like, I mean, I was a complete beginner. So that whole thing of how do I get more motivated? How do I get myself into this? That really came into play for me. And, you know, through the process of, you know, training for my first half marathon and, you know, kind of onward and upward from there, I realized that, you know, I kind of pulled out what I call, you know, the seven things you need instead of motivation. It's like a 7-step process. You know, and the first, I call it the 7 A's, you know, and the first is attraction. And that's asking yourself, do you actually want it? I mean, do you want to run? Do you want to work out? Is, you know, or is it something that you think that you should do? Because I think that that's, there's a big difference between what you actually want and what you think you should want, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, so figuring out if you actually want it. And then, you know, the next thing is attachment. If you do want it, why do you want it? What does it mean to you? You know, forming emotional attachments and emotional connections to your goals, I think is a key way in making them happen. And then, you know, after that, the next step for me was awareness. And this was the hardest part, kind of taking an honest, judgment-free look at my life, how I was spending my time, how I was spending my energy, what my eating habits were. You know, you can't change if you don't know where you're starting from. So I think being really realistic about, you know, about your life, you know, in it, like I said, in a judgment-free way, that's, you know, that's more important than motivation. And then once you've kind of done that life inventory, you know, I'll call it, you know, the next step for me was making adjustments. You know, nothing changes if nothing changes. And, you know, what are you willing to experiment with? It's, you know, you mentioned the gyms being super crowded, you know, do you want to go to a gym? Do you live in a place where the weather's nice enough to work out outside? What, you know, what time of day are you going to do this? What type of exercise do you want to experiment with? Like really getting specific about the details and then adjusting, you know, your schedule to figure out actually what's going to change. Because, you know, I think that you know, I thought, oh, I want to start running badly enough, so therefore it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, we think I want something so much, so poof, there you go. No poof, that, you know, that, mm-hmm. that doesn't happen. There's, you know, there's a reason why, you know, your life is set up in a certain way, and you can't just overlay this new habit on top of everything you're already doing without physically making room for it. So, you know, figuring out for me where I'm going to run, when I'm going to run, what if I need to buy anything in order to make that happen, you know, and then, mm-hmm. The next step for me, is, you know, or for anyone, I think is attitude. You know, the most important thing is how you treat yourself. If exercise is an avenue for self-criticism, you know, you'll quickly come to associate it with feeling shitty, and then you'll quit. And, you know, so the attitude that you take into it, you know, is I think really important. And, you know, then after that, you know, the sixth step is action. And I think it's funny because this is where most people usually start. They say, okay, I want to get in shape, or I want to this, or, you know, whatever it is. And so I'm just going to start doing it right away without kind of doing all of that, you know, emotional foundational prep work that might seem silly, but, you know, really kind of makes the big difference, or, you know, at least it did for me. And, you know, but then you get to the point where you have to take action. That doesn't mean you need a perfect plan. That doesn't mean nothing's perfect. It's just start, just do something. For me, it was like, put on shoes, like try to run down the block, you know, like you got to start somewhere. And, you know, it's once you change your story, then it's changing your habits, you know, and actions. And then the last one, is accountability. You know, for me, external accountability was really important at the beginning because I didn't have internal accountability yet. I wasn't really accountable to myself. And so it was really helpful for me to share my goals. I was blogging about it. But, you know, it doesn't have to be that public. Even if you share your goals with at least one other person, it's, you know, the act of being like, this is what I want to do. This is why I want to do it. And kind of going through all of those other six steps, what I want to do, why I want to do it. Here's what my life looks like. Here's what needs to change about my life in order to like fit this in. Here's the attitude I'm taking with it. Here's my first action step that I'm taking in the next 24 hours. And here's a way that you could support me, for example, mm-hmm. you know, and whether it's a friend or you do it with someone, or it's an online group or, you know, a training group or something. And then, you know, internal accountability, I think, builds over time. But those seven steps, I think that's what we need instead of motivation.
That sums it up. I am in awe. Wow, that is such great information. I think it's so, everything you said is so important. I love the way it's so organized and beautiful with all those A's, because what I have seen, it's a couple of things that I wanted to point out. And I wrote a chapter in my book about this, and the title of it is Exercise Does Not Have to Be Corporal Punishment. And I think that so many of us have grown up in with, you know, PE coaches making us do laps as punishment, and or punishing ourselves with exercise. And I think that it that's a story that needs to change in and of itself. If you're listening to this and that has been your story, then go back and listen to what Nicole just said. I want you to listen to that whole thing again. Cause yeah, I totally believe that. And really truly, yes, it is backwards that people just start taking action. And then they can't figure out why they didn't follow through. And then they just think they're bad at it. And then they throw in the towel because they think they're a failure and feel like shit about themselves forever and ever.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, and I think that perfectionism is, you know, a big piece too. And, you know, it's really easy to look at people who have made big changes. I mean, I'm a really good example. I went, like I said, from drinking all the time, eating all the things, not sleeping, doing no physical activity to basically the exact opposite of that. Mm-hmm. And it's really easy to look at that and say, oh my God, like she has her shit together and she just hit this poof moment where all of a sudden it wasn't like that anymore. And, you know, it's, and I'm not mm-hmm. strong enough or able to, you know, any of the things that we tell ourselves. And, you know, we put it in like a now and then timeline, like part one, she did this, part two, like now she doesn't. And, you know, I can never do that. And that's, you know,
No one knows what happened in your head. No one knows all the preparation and all the in-between time.
Exactly. And also, you know, it's what you do most of the time matters more than, you know, being perfect. And, you know, for me, kind of what the process was for this, I remember very clearly, it was in New Year's resolution time. It was January 1st, 2011. I set a goal of doing 20 minutes of exercise 3 times a week. Mm-hmm. So, and that was it. I wanted to move my body 20 minutes a day, 3 days a week.
That's only an hour a week.
right? I thought, this is so doable. I got this. Let me tell you, January went by and February went by and March went by, and I was trying, I was doing my best to integrate it into my life, but I just couldn't manage to stay consistent with it. I'd work out once or twice a week, sometimes three times a week, but never three times a week for more than 1 week at a time. And I remember April 2011 was the first month that I actually did 20 minutes of exercise three times a week for 4 weeks. And it was like, this was like the most exciting thing that had ever happened to me. Yeah. But I'll tell you, it took me 3 months of quote unquote failing at my goal in order to turn what I wanted into a habit, you know, but that's the thing, you know, I think that we don't give ourselves that transition time. You can't go from, if you've been doing X thing for 20 years, 30 years, you know, whatever it is, just because you decide something is going to be different, it's not like, okay, ooh, light switch. Now all the things are different. It doesn't work that way. We have to allow ourselves that transition time, you know, and if I would have after that first week said, oh, I didn't meet this goal, I'm out.
Yeah.
Then, I mean, right now I'm training to run across the country from LA to New York in 2015. And I mean, this never would have happened. This like huge evolution.
Yeah.
You know, if I wouldn't have given myself, it took me 120 days to get to the point where I was consistently working out. And not to say that that's going to be everyone else's timeline, but that was 120 days of exercising, not exercising, thinking about it, feeling like shit about it, wanting to, I mean, you name it, all the things, you know, but it takes time. I think we glorify these huge life overhauls, you know, Biggest Loser, Clean Sweep, you know.
I was just thinking the same thing. That's not reality.
Trying to find the perfect gift for someone special in your life, maybe for Mother's Day, but feeling overwhelmed? Finding a unique gift that they'll love, that's personal and that they won't already have, can be the ultimate challenge. That's why I'm so excited I've discovered Songfinch. It's an amazing, thoughtful gift, and it's easy and fun to make. Songfinch lets you create an original radio-quality song inspired by your own life and the people you love. It's completely unique, personal, and lasts forever. I had Songfinch make me a song about my dad, which was a gift to myself. This was such a personal song for me, and I was a little skeptical the artist could capture the emotion I wanted. But during the process, they have you share some personal details about your relationship with the person you're creating the song for. Then a Songfinch musician of your choice, you get to pick based on samples they have, will write, record, and produce your original song in just 4 to 7 days. I love my song so much. I was so emotional when I listened to it. I had no changes. It's perfect. Whether your song is for Father's Day, an upcoming graduation, wedding, or anniversary, or even just a gift to show your loved one how much you care, start your song now to lock in one of Songfinch's top artists. For a limited time, Songfinch is letting our listeners upload their song to Spotify for free, so you and the lucky person you gift it to can listen to it anywhere, anytime. Go to songfinch.com/noise and start your song. After you purchase, you'll be prompted to add Spotify streaming for your original song for free, a $50 value. Again, my URL is songfinch.com/noise. Don't forget to share your song with us too. songfinch.com/noise. There's definitely been times in my life where my paycheck ran out before I got paid again, and I wish I could have accessed my next paycheck a few days before I was due to get it. Well, what if I told you that can happen with Earnin? Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. Just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. You can use Earnin for anything you need to, therapy visits, rent, or even extra self-help books. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, when I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. It gives me a lot of peace of mind. Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Noise under podcast when you sign up. It really helps the show. Noise under podcast. Subject to your available earnings, location, daily max, and pay period max. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Another thing I can't be with, we were talking about that before we started recording, I cannot be with the Biggest Loser. And yeah. It hurts my heart when I see people that are like, it's so motivating, but why can't I do it? And I'm like, because that's not TV.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, go be on the show and you can do it. Mm-hmm. that's really all it is. And we won't go there.
But no, but I think it's part of the problem, you know, like these messages that we're receiving that, you know, quick fix or, you know, means to an end, or like you said, you know, do this to get this perfect body or that, like, I feel like it's not addressing like the real things. Like, if not to say that like getting in shape or weight loss, like none of these are bad goals. Your goals are your goals, obviously. Mm-hmm. It's, but I think that goals are only worthwhile if the pursuit of that goal is something that makes you feel the way you want to feel 90% of the time. I mean, sometimes it's hard. Stuff's hard. It's awful. You, even the things you love, you hate them sometimes. That's real life. But, you know, it's, if the pursuit of a goal is, like you said, if it's punishment, if you hate it and you're only doing it to fit into this dress or to do that, I mean, that, what's the point? Mm-hmm. You're just making yourself miserable. You know, it's, you have to find a way to change your story and, you know, make an emotional connection to it and pick things that the pursuit of those things makes you happy, whether you actually check off the end result thing or not.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I love that. So you, so something that, and I'm really, really curious about this, that you like to talk about is the value of setting hugely unrealistic goals. Because before you talk about that, let me just give you a personal example of, because that does not seem to work for me. And that's why, you know, when you and I were talking before we started recording about how in 2015 I want to do a half Ironman. And that's, and to me right now in the end of 2013 with, you know, coming out of shoulder surgery and, that seemed like a hugely unrealistic goal. So like part of me is like, maybe that's not such a good idea. Mm-hmm. And I am going to try to just do an Olympic length next year. But so what do you have to say about that, of the value of setting hugely unrealistic goals?
Yeah. You know, it's, unrealistic goals, it's not, you know, push yourself to do something that you're, that's like not safe to do, you know, but for me, it's mostly like, I think that hugely unrealistic goals, what I mean by that is, I think those are the things that really light us up. You know, if we pick goals, and a goal meaning like, you know, an end result, something like that, that feels, oh, that's totally doable. It's not that exciting. And we're making those decisions and setting those goals based on our past experiences. So we're actually limiting ourselves because we have no idea what, you know, 10 action steps down the road, what's going to be possible. You know, I look back at some of the goals that I've set and stuff. And if you would have told me how much bigger things could get, you know, but once you set a goal, you put your blinders on. And if the goal's too small, I think that you don't see sometimes like bigger potential. So I'm a really big fan of hugely unrealistic goals, but very realistic, tiny action steps.
Gotcha.
Because
okay.
I think that you have to be aware of what is realistic in your day-to-day life. And setting realistic action steps on like a daily or weekly basis is absolutely a learned behavior. It took me so long of working for myself to be able to like set a to-do list for a day that wasn't actually for a week and a half, you know? And then even no matter how much you get done, you still feel bad about yourself because you didn't do all the things that you said, but those things are crazy town, you know? So I think that having I'll use this. I know I just mentioned this briefly. You know, so my plan, March 1st, 2015, my friend Liz and I, we're going to take 5 months and we're going to run from LA to New York. And that to me is a hugely unrealistic goal. I mean, that is crazy town. Mm-hmm. I've run 2 full marathons. Like, I'm running consistently and I have a coach. So I believe, and you know, he believes that we can get there. And I've talked to other people that have done it. So I know that it's not like, you know, I'm not trying to sprout wings and fly to the moon. You know, it's not that kind of unrealistic, but It's something that I can't wrap my head around. I can't understand any of the details. And when it comes time, I'm going to have to set really tiny action steps towards it. But the magnitude of that goal, like, really excites me, you know? And so I think that having those unrealistic goals, also because I think the things that we really want, our brains, they want to keep us safe. You know, we have this... That's what fear is. And I think that our fear response, this like biological fear response, hasn't evolved as quickly as our circumstances, you know? So doing something new and that's scary business-wise has the same like internal feeling as, oh my God, saber-tooth tiger, run, you know, whereas like, it's not as dangerous. Right. And so I think that when you think, oh, I want this, like, and even for you, if it was like a full Ironman, for example, like if it's something that floated through your head and like got you excited, that is an example to me of like an unrealistic goal that's worth just like throwing on a vision board or throwing up there. And then starting to take steps towards it while being open to the fact that the outcome might change. Because, you know, I think long-term plans are useless. And I think that you don't know the third step until you've done the second step.
Right.
So it's really just for me, okay, what's one single completable thing that I can do, you know, by the end of the day in the next 24 hours to move this forward. And then once that thing's done, then it's the next thing. And then you see, maybe it leads you to that goal. Maybe it leads you in a totally different direction, you know, and so that's my thought on one day at a time.
Yeah. And it's so funny because I take a lot away from 12-step programs, and that's one of the things that we do is one day at a time, because we can't look at the rest of our life doing this behavior that's kind of foreign to us. Like, and for, you know, and it's the same thing with my book. And people, so many people are like, they look at my life, you know, I've got these two little kids, I've got a full-time practice, and I only work part-time. So they're like, how the fuck did you do it? And really, it was one word at a time. Like, I could not, like, if I thought about the whole thing, or if someone would have even told, it would have been worse if someone would have told me what exactly it was going to look like, because I would have been like, no, it's too much, it's too scary. So I was like, I don't know how to write a book proposal. I don't know how to shop for an agent. I don't even know what I'm doing. But all I know is that this is a very unrealistic goal. It's a dream. It lights me up, like you were saying. And I am just going to do it one step at a time, one word at a time. And that's what I did. And that's what I tell people all the time. Like, if you, it's one thing too. I think where people get tripped up is they, you know, it's, and I encourage people, like, fantasize about your dream, like picture yourself doing it and, you know, all those things, but watch out for that invisible line that you're going to cross where you go into shit.
Yeah.
It's too big. Yeah. It's like, do you think the people that climb Mount Everest, like, look up at the whole mountain and dwell and totally get in their gremlin voice of, look at how big this mountain is. How the hell are we ever going to do it? No, they don't. They know it's just everyone that's climbed that mountain has done it one step at a time, and you'll eventually get there. And it sounds really rudimentary, but I think still smart, able-bodied people, we get caught up in that. And then we never even take that first step, or we quit after the first few.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we really, really like to make things complicated for ourselves.
Don't.
And, you know, it's that, like, exactly what you just said. I mean, it's simple. It's not, but simple doesn't have to mean easy, you know, but the simple answer is usually the answer. You know, when I think about, when I talk about unrealistic goals, you know, I also talk about them in terms of, like, you know, sexy goals. They're the things that feel really sexy, but I mean, you reach big sexy goals one, like, very unsexy step at a time.
Yeah.
And it's, that's the disadvantage, again, to poor Biggest Loser, really harping on it, but to stuff like that, is that it's you only see what you see, you know.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, for example, you know, when I first started running, like I said, I could probably run about 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it was awful. Everything was awful. I wanted to die the whole time. And I, my sexy, unrealistic, never going to happen in a million years goal, I was like, I'm gonna run a half marathon. And that, to me, I mean, I can't even begin to tell you how crazy that seemed to me in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And part of me was like, this is never actually going to happen, but it gives me something to, like, set my plans around, because I know myself well enough to know that I'm not just going to get up and go running. I'll tell you, even now, I'm not. I like training more than I like racing, but I need races to anchor my training around. So a lot of it's like, call a spade, like, be honest with what you're not going to do. Like, I'm not just going to get up and go running to go running. So I needed something to train for. And I started looking around for a training program. And I will tell you, there's no such thing as a beginner's half marathon training program that's actually for beginners. Everything that I found was, like, starting at, like, 4 or 5 miles, you know, or even like, and I'm like, two minutes, what's happening here? You know? So I really went through a process of kind of custom building myself a 6 month, 24 week training plan that I then turned into a program. You know, I run an online virtual program right now for people that, you know, want to do the same thing. And there was nothing out there like that. So, you know, I built that myself, but again, it's not about the half marathon. It's literally one workout at a time. And, you know, it was first a 5K and then it was a 10K, and, you know, finishing the half marathon itself, that's sexy. That's glamorous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, laying on your living room floor covered in sweat, like, stretching your hamstrings every day, like, that's not, it's just not sexy,
but
you can't have one without the other. And, you know, personally, one of my biggest weaknesses, and I think this is pretty common, is that I tend to spend too much time in the thinking and planning stages of a new project.
Isn't that the fun part? I love that too. That is mine
too.
I am like a slave to my calendar, and I'm like, this day I'm going to do this many miles and this hills. And then, yeah, and it's all.
And, you know, I think there's definitely, you know, there's value in planning somewhat, but, you know, at the beginning I read, I read everything I could get my hands on, you know, about running. And I thought, like, this is going to give me a leg up. And I'll tell you what, it did nothing. I'm still on the treadmill, like hanging off the side, like wondering like when someone's going to bring me the oxygen, you know, like yeah. it's all the planning in the world. Like, it's nice up until a point, you know, and that's where the unsexy steps come in. It took me 24 weeks to train for that first half marathon. It's 168 days. That's yeah. a long ass time. You know, it's mm-hmm. cramps, it's blisters. It's, you know, why is this run bad? Why are five runs in a row bad? Why do I feel like this is never going to get better? Why, you know, and it's, mm-hmm. it's just, it's one step at a time. And you want, I will tell you, training for and running my first half marathon changed my life. I did lose weight. I got in better shape. I started sleeping better, you know, all the things, you know, mental clarity, but it changed my life because it taught me how to break a big goal down into small steps. And it taught me that you can't procrastinate on everything. Like, this isn't the kind of thing where you can like cram and write a paper the night before it's due. Like, I can't not run all week and then run all my miles in one day. Mm-hmm, it just, mm-hmm. it doesn't happen. So it was like, I physically had to force myself to learn how to break things up. And I can't even tell you how much that's helped. I've now used that same process when I'm creating courses, you know, for my business or do anything. It's like, big thing. Okay. One step at a time. All mm-hmm. you can do is one completable thing at a time. This is done. Check it off. Next thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that. And you started to touch on kind of like when you were talking about the unsexy stuff and how emotional it can be. And so that's the next thing I wanted to ask you about is what's the emotional side of making big life changes like the ones you've been talking about?
Yeah. The emotional stuff's everything. It's, you know, most people aren't sitting around not knowing what the tangible steps are to do, you know, like if, and we're obviously talking about like fitness and stuff like this a lot, but no one's thinking like, you know, the way to do this is to eat a lot of cupcakes and stay in bed all day. Like it's, you know, like we know what to do. That's usually mm-hmm. not. And if you don't know what to do, you know, www.whatever, you can figure it out. You know?
Very quickly.
Uh-huh. Or you can hire someone, you can, you know, you can join a training program. And that's the biggest difference for me when I was creating my training program was focusing on the emotional side, because it's that prep work. It's the five steps that you do before you take action. You know, it's being aware of what your current story is, you know, in relation to whatever your goal is. Like, what was I telling myself? You know, I was telling myself that you start things and you don't stick with them. You know, I had a track record of gym memberships and, you know, body boot camp DVDs, whatever, you know, you name it. Like, I started it and finished it. So my story was that I'm really good at planning and starting stuff and getting excited, but I'm never going to follow through. So I'm never going to be able to have what I want.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down,
or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model. So that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun. So check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
Okay. you know, other parts of my story were that I would quit when things get difficult, or that self-care is always the first thing to go because everything else is more important. You know, so it's looking at what these stories are that you tell yourself often unconsciously, like about yourself, and recognizing that and, you know, deciding to change that story. And that's a very emotional process. You know, I think that another big change that I made, and this, you know, kind of came later, was quitting sugar. And that was huge. And I'll tell you, that was the single most emotional thing that I've ever done in my entire life, was kind of disentangling myself from this, you know, sugar addiction. And there was a period of time where I had to let myself like grieve the loss of that in my life, which might sound silly because it's sugar, but you know, these things that are our comfort tools or our coping mechanisms, you know, there's letting that go and building new habits. That's in trying to pretend that there isn't a very emotional side of that, mm-hmm. I think is setting ourselves up for disappointment.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally am with you on that. I actually just wrote a blog post for a recovery blog because, you know, being an addict myself and probably a sugar addict at this point, but, I quit drinking 2 years ago, and I, you know, and I help a lot of people that are brand new to sobriety and trying to get sober. And it really is that there is such an emotional attachment. And I myself wasn't physically addicted to alcohol, thank goodness. Didn't get the shakes and all that stuff, but it really was this emotional thing and of having to let go. And really, I think that people, I think it's something that needs to be talked about more too. And, yeah, so I can relate on that sense, but yeah, I can see how it could be the same thing for sugar. I mean, it's just like, it becomes such a big part of our lives.
Well, and you know, addiction is addiction. And it sounds like you and I are on a similar time frame. I quit drinking 2.5 years ago, you know, and it was the same thing. It wasn't, it wasn't a physical addiction. You know, it was all kind of a social, emotional coping mechanism type mm-hmm. thing. And, you know, for me, it was easier to quit because once I realized that was the direct link to my insomnia, you know, and I started testing it, and every time I would drink anything, you know, I wouldn't sleep and I would feel horrible for days. It was very easy to quit at the beginning, but it wasn't until about 6 months into it where I started to have to kind of process through all of this emotional stuff. Like, I was this person before where like drinking was my social life. Like, and I'm not talking about like, luckily it was never really dangerous, you know, but mm-hmm. it was more just like, that was my identity, you know, mm-hmm. like happy hours and hosting things and cocktail parties and, you know, all this stuff. And I didn't really know how to have fun or how to be sociable or extroverted or any of these things about alcohol, but I didn't realize that was all true until all of a sudden it was gone. And I was like, whoa, I actually have to feel my feelings, yes. you know? And it's a similar thing with anything else that you're talking about, like making these things, like we think, oh, it's so easy. Just work out more. Like, and we try to bully ourselves into this stuff, but there's some like deep emotional stuff there. Like that it's, you have to examine mm-hmm. why you're not doing or haven't been doing those things. Like, where's your resistance? What does it mean to you to this, that, or the other, you know? And it's very emotional. And I think that letting it be emotional takes a lot of the pressure off. Like, oh, it's okay that I feel sad, or that some days I don't want to work out, or that some days I miss my old life, or any of those things, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So, oh, this is all such really, really, really good stuff. And if you guys are listening and you want to check out some of the links, just go to yourkickasslife/19. This is episode 19, to be able to just click through and find Nicole's website, to find her half marathon training plan and all the other amazing plans and courses that she has. So I want to just ask you one last question. We'll end with this, it being the new year. And even if it wasn't, you know, I'm sure people are all pumped now wanting to start something. So tell us, like, how does someone just start?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, you know, give yourself a little bit of time to at least do some of the emotional stuff, like at least take yourself through those steps. That to me is just starting, you know? But after that, I mean, in terms of actually taking action, you know, at the beginning, when you're new to something, running was a really good example. There seemed to be a lot of barriers to entry. You know, for me, it was like, oh my God, I don't have all the right gear. I don't know exactly what to do. I don't know what perfect form looks like. Like, I can't be a runner unless this, that, you know, like I gave myself a laundry list of things, you know? And I think that's pretty common, but guess what? Like, you can, like, no one needs to give you permission to do what you want to do. Like, in basics, it's always good to start with the basics, you know, all the extra stuff. the right gear, the right this, the spec, it's great. But the thing that matters most, running, for example, is to just run. Like, if you want to be a runner, run. You're a runner. The end. You know, if you want to write, write. It, the action verb that you need, it's right there in the word. You know, yeah. Like that's just
put an I in front of it.
and be like, get excited about the fact that it's messy and you have no idea what the hell you're doing, because it's not about perfection. It's about gradual forward progress, and things being like, done is better than perfect. That's always the mantra that I go to. And, you know, it's forget about, you know, all the fans. You don't need $200 underwear, you know, like, you just, the more you run, the better runner you'll be. The more you write, the closer you'll be to finishing your book. Like, it's just giving yourself permission to not worry about all the nonsense, you know? Mm-hmm.
I absolutely love that. I think, yes, I think it's so, that's such important information, just to not worry about all the bullshit, like the fringe stuff that you can go. And fitness itself it's a huge, very, you know, lucrative industry for retailers. And really, you don't, I love that. Like, if you want to be a runner, just be one, just call yourself one and start running. And you don't have to, this is so funny. Like, I have done a lot of self growth work, you know, and I've come a long way with not caring what people think of me. And it still hurts sometimes, but this is something I still do. When I haven't run in a while, and this year has been so fucking tough because I slipped last January and completely tore up my shoulder and had frozen shoulder. And then I trained for the Ragnar Relay Series and did that. And it was hard because I had like no mobility in my shoulder. But anyway, when I'm running outside in my neighborhood and I have to walk, and I'll walk for a little bit, and if I see another runner, I'm like, shit.
Uh-huh.
And then I'll start running again.
Yeah, totally. Well,
don't even see me.
Well, that's the thing. You know, the couple other things, the last things that I'll say. One, first of all, I did Ragnar this year too. It was so fun. So that's a good one for people. But it's keep your eyes on your own paper. You know, like, it just doesn't matter. You know, like, the kindergarten advice, like, is still the best advice, you know? And, you know, for me, in terms of starting something new, I think, like, the best habit to adopt is the habit of experimentation. Give yourself permission to just try shit. If you like it, keep doing it. If you don't like it, do something else, you know? Right. And it's going to sound silly and overly obvious, but you have to pick something that you enjoy doing.
Right.
And, you know, it's, if you don't like running, okay. If you don't like yoga, there's plenty of ways out there, if we're talking specifically about fitness, that this applies to everything else. And, the other thing too is keep in mind that you don't have to love it right away. I didn't really fall in love with running until about a month into training for my second half marathon. I did it. I liked things from it. And after I finished the first one, I was like, I got to do this again just to prove to myself this isn't a fluke. That's really what happened. And so I signed up for the second one. And at that point, my skills, like, I had gotten better. We like things that we're good at. Just inherently, people enjoy things the better they get at them. So don't focus on motivation. Don't focus on, oh my God, but I don't like this. Focus on getting better. And when you get better, like, as your skills improve, you will like it more.
Yeah. I love that. Very, very good point. Both of those. And I just sometimes, and fun is the same way. I think, like, it's just an acquired taste, and you might fall in love with it slowly, but if enough time has passed and you still don't love it, do something else. Like, mm-hmm. It's still, and I wrote about this in my book too. Like, it boggles my mind where people are like, I hate running, but they're runners. And I'm like, why? Why would you waste your time doing something like that? And like I hate my weakest event is cycling. Like, I hate it. Like, I don't like it at all. And I'm not good at it. So that's probably, it's my weakest event in triathlons. And like, it kills me to even like think like, oh, I should probably get a really good road bike now if I'm going to do longer triathlons. But so it's just not so, like, if I'm not training for a triathlon, I do not get on a bike. I just don't. Yeah. I don't like it. Like, I'll swim and I will run till the cows come home, but it's just not. And so I don't force it on me, and it just takes a lot of the pressure off, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, we are out of time now. So one last time, please tell people where they can find you. And if you have any free stuff that you can give away on your site, please point us in that direction.
Yeah. So lifelessbullshit.com, that's, you know, where everything lives. And I'll send you a couple of links, to, you know, some good places for people to start if they're interested in, you know, these kind of topics, specifically motivation, you know, running, that type of stuff. But lifelessbullshit.com, that's where everything is.
Cool. Thank you so much for being here, Nicole. I love this
Thank
conversation.
You. This You're is actually, so fun.
This is, I think, out of all my podcasts, I have not this is my first topic on fitness, and I love it. It's my background. I love talking about it. And I'm so happy that to have you on here telling all of my wonderful people about it for the new year.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, perfectly timed. I had so much fun.
Okay, we will see you all out in cyberspace. Thank you, listeners. Don't forget to go to iTunes and leave a rating and review for me. I would appreciate it so much. And we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter-Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.